leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has refinements, technological advances.
Right here in the bunker. Terrible Tommy right here next to Terrible Tommy, Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, where we still sell regular and Ethel. That's right. Okay, August the 5th, 2014, and today, guess what? Whoa! Sling Blade's supposed to be on here, if I can catch him around there. I'm waiting on him to come knocking at my door. We're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your snail mail and your donations for the radio show, and it's time for the August donations. Thank you very much for those who've already got them in. Yeah, and go to resist.com for further education. And, of course, we send you out bulletins and news updates all day long, every day, and that should keep you pretty well in the news and in the know-how about how this crazy world is going. So that's it for now, and I'm waiting here for a Sling Blade. Well, here he is, the one and only Sling Blade, fresh in from parts unknown. Good morning.
Good morning, you dirty little Bolshevik.
I'll tell you, I picked up some pretty neat, interesting enemies over the years. I was just reading this morning. Some guys put out something on the internet about I'm a traitor because I exposed the Willis Carto little saga that went on years ago with millions of dollars that were stolen. And I'm so privy to the whole thing that they try to put a smokescreen up and call me a traitor.
Was this something that was put on the internet recently?
Yeah, it just came in this morning, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you know, I keep running into this name, Willis Carto, on the, when I'm reading about racial things. I always thought it was a pseudonym of Revelo Oliver.
No, he's a, he's one of the long-time right-wing gurus in the country, and he's done a lot of good things, and he's done a lot of bad things. So anyhow, but they don't want to hear about the truth about the bad things, because it has to do with the millions of dollars that came from the Edison estate. Jean Farrell was the granddaughter of Thomas Edison. She lived in Switzerland, and she decided to give her money to the Institute for Hysterical Review, as I call it.
Oh, shit.
And, Carto was the agent. So the whole story revolves around the fact that she died, and she had a housekeeper there. That's the only person she had there. And that housekeeper was an agent to the ADL, B'nai B'rith.
And holy
so,
shit.
And so Carto, he was told early on to call her every day or so to make sure everything was okay, but he was too cheap to make the call, so about a week went by or so, certain length of time after she died, and of course that gave the ADL B'nai B'rith agent time to get with the big boys, and they went around the world and sealed up all her accounts so that it cost Carto a hell of a lot of money to break them loose through attorneys and so forth, simply because he was cheap. If he'd have done
so the CEO got all that money?
They didn't get the money. They did get part of the money. Yeah, I don't know exactly the dollars and cents they got. But they also, the point is, they cost the IHR and Carto a hell of a lot of money because he had to go to each bank. Jean Farrell didn't trust the banks, and she didn't trust the United States Bank, so she put all her money in other banks around the country, around the world. So with those accounts all locked up, it took attorneys to go all over the world to try and get them unlocked. So obviously they spent a fortune doing that. In fact, Carto tried to employ the attorney of Joseph Goebbels Family Trust, which he, there's still an estate for Joseph Goebbels, Mr. Junot, who lived over in Europe, I think it's Switzerland too. Well, Carto is so cheap, he wanted him to do it for nothing. And Junot says, look, I got a family to feed. I can't do this for nothing. And so he refused to do it. Later, Carto asked me if I could get him another attorney, and I told him about an attorney that we had used briefly in L.A., but I told him he wasn't any good. But he was cheap. Carto went to him and tried, got him to work it for him, and he screwed it all up, too. So anyhow, it's a long story, but anyhow, I composed from my memories all these things and sent back out, so all these pro-Carto and anti-Carto people can chew on that for a while.
I don't know why you don't write a book. I mean, I know you're busy and all that. Maybe you can have John or someone ghostwrite it for you, but, I mean, you know, when you pass on, all that information is going to be gone.
Well, most of it I've talked about many times on radio shows and so forth, and I've emailed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but that's electronic means, and, you know, that has a way of being sabotaged and stuff. But, you know, if it's in a book form and a book gets passed around, like, through certain circles, that would be great. I mean, you can title it the Dirty Little Bullshit.
Yeah, well, of course, a lot of that stuff, a lot of people don't even care about. And, of course, the right wing, they believe a whole lot of stuff when people attack me, and they want to believe it because I've sort of walked away from them and like that. I don't know. I should make notes.
Supposedly you weren't, you didn't walk away from, supposedly they kicked you out, remember?
Yeah, that's true. They did. Dr. Fields called me and said, well, you're no longer in the right wing. And I said, oh, okay. So anyhow.
Guy, is he still alive?
Fields is still alive, I'm pretty sure. In fact, I've had a couple of friendly letters back and forth from him since that time, years later. I don't hold grudges except for really, really bad stuff, you know, like traitors who turn people into the cops and feds and stuff like that. But people who I just disagree with about different things, I don't hold grudges very long. You know, I get mad for a while, but I got other things to do.
Hey, what about that Glenn Miller guy that went on that shooting spree? You think he was trying to like salvage his reputation or some shit like that? And he didn't even kill any Jews; he killed a bunch of white people.
Well, he was no good from years before. He had made deals with Morris Dees and all kinds of stuff, and he'd ratted out a couple of his comrades. He even testified at Fort Smith against several of the leading racial right-wingers of the day, I got a mental blank, but anyhow, several of them. Fortunately, I wasn't indicted in that situation, so I thought I might be, but I never was. So, anyhow, he was a total embarrassment for 25 years, the guy. But yet this guy over at VNN took him on and let him write and do radio interviews for him and everything else. That's why I couldn't have anything to do really with VNN, because he was given all the information on the rat, but he kept supporting him.
Hey, is the National Alliance, all that, is that still around?
Well, sort of. I mean, Eric Gleeby's still you know, working with it on a small scale. They're trying to get rid of that property that Pierce had down in West Virginia, and which they should have never bought it in the first place. I told them long before Pierce was dead. I said, that's a white elephant if I ever seen something, you know. Before Pierce operated in Washington, D.C., and they stood out on every street corner handing out the attack newspaper, and he's very effective. And then he said he was going to move down into the hills of West Virginia. I told him personally, I said, that's ridiculous. That's the worst move you can make. It's like you're hiding out. There's nothing going on down there. I said, you have much more effect right there in the belly of the beast. But he...
You told him that? You personally told him that?
I personally told him that, yeah. But that's about the only contact we had, except at a couple of the meetings that his people threw, and they invited me to speak. But other than that, we had rare contact. He was sort of, you know, arrogant, sort of, you know, thought he was...
Elitist. He was an elitist, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was an elitist, yeah. And a lot of stuff he did was great, and a lot of stuff he said was fine, but he was an elitist. Go ahead.
I got this, I want to run this by you here. I got a letter from ComEd. I don't know what electric company you have in your area, but I have Commonwealth Edison in my area. And it says important new meters coming to your neighborhood very soon.
Oh, yeah.
They're just a sling blade. Within the next 45 days, ComEd will be upgrading existing meter in your home as a new smart meter. Now, listen to this. I'm going to reinterpret these next lines for you. It says the smart meter will give you access to more information on your home electricity use so you can make changes. But I think the way you should read is the smart meter will give us access to more information on your home electricity use so we can make changes.
Absolutely.
From what I understand, and I think Edward Snowden kind of whistle blew a lot of this shit, is that this smart meter, it's like the guy at the electric office can punch in your unit number, and it will actually, the smart meter will actually tell them what's going on in your unit. Like, they have the software that will determine if an electric user or electric razor is being used. So if they have software that says that it's a microwave in use, they can actually pinpoint what part of your unit you're in.
Well, the feds have used that source for a long time. I mean, they would find out some guy out in the country was using a tremendous amount of electricity, and they didn't see anything really factory-wise around there, so they'd find out their marijuana dealers, because marijuana dealers, growers, use a lot of electricity. So they've used that tactic generally for a long time. So there's nothing secret anymore. I mean, it's ridiculous even really to talk about it, because they're going to use everything they come up with. It's going to have a back door on it to find out what you're doing. So I know the right wing wants to sit around and wring their hands, but what are they going to do about it? They're going to do it. They're doing it right now, and you have no real privacy. In fact, you never did have a great expectation of privacy. If they wanted to know all about you, they could get it before we even had computers.
Yeah, they said that they could now access your home computer. Like, even if you're not on it, they can access the camera on your computer and watch inside your unit. Is that true, you think?
Well, some of that is the right wing that blow things way out of proportion. A lot of it is false flag stuff that the right wing, there's guys that get on there and plant all kinds of crazy stuff, and so they have methods of doing a lot of things, but sometimes the right wing stretches it way out of proportion where they can do everything. Well, they can't do everything. But it just means that you, as an individual, have to be far more cognizant of your situation, your security, It means working at it. See, the average person doesn't want to work at it. But so if they don't want to work at it, to hell with them. Let them spy on them. But you and I and other people should do everything we can to keep them from doing that. And one way is to not use a cell phone. Don't even take a cell phone out with you. And things like that. There's a, you know, a lot of other things. And if you're going to be on the internet, it don't make any difference. If you're on the internet, you just don't say anything criminal, or you're conspiring to do anything criminal.
Yeah, so you recognize there's no anonymity anymore on the internet, right?
Right. A long time ago. Even when some of my friends were telling me, oh, yeah, we can encrypt all that stuff, and then they could never get it in 1,000 years. I said, bullshit. Where there's a will, there's a way, and they've got millions and billions of dollars to spend. And believe me, if they want the information, they'll get it.
And they recruit the best minds out of MIT and the IT field, so...
Well, wouldn't you if you were in power? See, a lot of the things we cry about, we'd do the same thing if we were in power. I mean, wouldn't you want to know what your enemy's talking about?
That is absolutely true. I would definitely, if I was to overthrow the system, I guess it would be one tyrant taking over another tyrant to serve, you know?
Well, there's different types of dictatorships. There's benevolent dictatorships, like benevolent monarchs, and there is the dark side, you know?
Right.
And so there's always going to be, all governments are oligarchy, ruled by the few, always was, always will be. Arguing about, in my local paper, they're arguing all the time about republic and democracy and socialism and capitalism, all that stuff. It's all oligarchy. You're wasting your time talking about all this kind of stuff, you know. It's just who's on top, who's on the bottom, and the few guys who run the whole show. I mean, life is really a lot simpler than they want to make it. The right wing and a lot of these sort of pseudo-intellectuals like to make everything real complicated.
Yeah, but don't you think that they could turn around and tell you that you're oversimplifying things?
Yeah, they can say that. They do all that kind of stuff, but I don't waste any time worrying about it. If people want to believe what I say, well, that's fine. If they don't, they don't have to. Go on down the road. That's the way I've always been. If you don't agree with me, just go do something else. Do it your way. I'm not telling you that I'm perfectly right on all the issues, but I'm just going to say what I'm going to say. If you don't agree, well, you start your own situation up and say what you want, and they do. I mean, we got hundreds of radio shows now by racists and anti-Jews, and you name it. They're all out there, so people got their pick about who they want to believe.
Wait a minute. I mean, what, are you saying on the Internet? I mean, I don't think there's anyone else out there. I haven't heard any other radio programs out there. I think you've got the top-notch one out there.
Oh, man, they're all over.
So I know there's podcasts, but that's different, right?
Well, they got regular radio shows like I'm doing here. They're all over the place. I mean, you know, most of them, if I have contact with them, I get along with them. I've been interviewed by a lot of them, and then once in a while there's one that doesn't like me. But the point is... anybody can start up a radio show now, just like I'm doing. So there's hundreds of them out there that are not only racial, but some of them are inspiration and, you know, arguing about the Holocaust ad nauseum and all that stuff, you know.
Right.
Whatever you want. That's the trouble. If you're not on a computer today, you're really out of the loop.
Yeah, well... I don't know. I mean, you got to have time to be on the computer, which I don't, trying to juggle two jobs and stuff like that. And then, you know, I don't know. I just don't want to be enslaved. I mean, I look around in our society and I see people are constantly looking at some kind of handheld device. They're looking at their smartphone or looking at an iPad or looking at one of those, you know, Wi-Fi computers, and they're on the computer and everybody's on this fucking electronical goddamn handheld device, and I just don't want to be a part of that.
Well, I understand what you're saying, because almost all of it's a waste of time, but for accurate, up-to-date information. You have to sift through a lot of stuff, but you can get quick information on what's going on and what you can do about it and what we should do about it, or should we do anything about it. We have access to that, and we need to know what's going on at all times. Not everybody. You don't have to do it. I can tell you, or somebody else could tell you. You know, you can call in on a telephone and get the information. So, but the point is, I agree with you that most of the people with these handheld things are just a waste of time. In fact, they're dangerous in traffic and can cause a wreck. And these people that
I went and saw a movie last night. I saw that movie Lucy about this girl who is portrayed by Scarlett Johansson, and she's like accidentally gets involved with this drug ring and they're smuggling drugs, and they synthesize some kind of chemical where it unlocks all the potential in the brain.
Huh.
Have you seen the trailer for this?
I don't think I've seen the trailer. I saw it advertised.
Yeah, it was it was very interesting. At the music or the movie critics gave it like a half a star. So basically, just said, you know, fuck you, we don't like your movie. But you know, I thought it was very thought provoking. Of course, they had to have the genius black scientist portrayed by Morgan Freeman.
Oh yeah, he is very famous for that, Morgan Freeman. And everybody now, if there's a white hero, one white hero, he's got to have a black sidekick. Every white guy's got to have a little black kid in the neighborhood that he's friends with and all that kind of stuff. and then the guy's got to have him a coffee-colored negress, you know, to sleep with and all that shit. It's something else.
Yeah, but, you know, the movie is very thought-provoking, you know.
Well, that's why I go to movies. There's a lot of thought-provoking movies. A lot of people say it's a waste of time. Well, it's a waste of time if you're not dissecting them in your mind and taking out what you want and leaving the rest. It's like anything else. It's like a book. I mean, you throw out one chapter, you keep the next chapter, you know. So it's no different than reading a book. So anyhow, I watched a good documentary. I watched a lot of documentaries on the Eastern Front, but last night I was watching another one. This was on Stalingrad, and this was all live, all the original footage and movies, and it's unbelievable how arrogant Hitler was. That you know, essentially he lost the whole goddamn thing in the East by wanting to get Stalingrad, because that was the namesake of course, the leader of the country. And he felt he had to take Stalingrad to really show Stalin who was boss. So
how many German soldiers were lost in that campaign?
There were millions.
Millions?
Millions. No, I mean like
Hold one. On. No. I don't think you understood what I said. How many German soldiers died in that campaign just for Stalingrad?
Well, there was at least a million, and
holy cow!
And on both sides, the Russians lost. The Russians lost, I think, 800,000, and the Germans lost about 1.2 million, and of course the citizens of Leningrad went from 500,000. There was only 1,500 civilians left alive. But you see, Stalin.
Wait. They went from a population reduction of 500,000 to 1,500?
Right. And because that's how vicious the fighting was. You see, the mistake is always made trying to fight a guerrilla warfare operation in an urban area using infantry troops. It don't work. You got to have specially trained troops for that kind of fighting. Hitler threw everything he had in infantry troops fighting house to house in Leningrad, and they got their ass kicked. Of course, they kicked the Russians' ass, too, because the Russians were fighting almost a suicidal battle. But the leading up to Leningrad was ridiculous, because instead of going straight for Moscow, you take the capital, you cut the nuts off your enemy, just like the British did in 1812 when they took the capital of the United States and burned it to the ground. That was a horrible setback psychologically to the American people. He could have been in Moscow, early on. He had a straight path right through. And another mistake he was making, he was rounding up Russian prisoners by the hundreds of thousands. They didn't know what to do with them. Well, I tell you what I would have done with them. Most of those troops, or a lot of those troops, or a high percentage of those troops, hated Stalin and hated the system, but they were trying to protect their country. I'd have gave them all rifles and pointed them towards Moscow and had a couple of battalions of German troops to make sure they didn't get out of hand, and if they tried to do anything funny, just shoot them. But they had this idea that the Russian was subhuman, and so, we wouldn't use the Russians, So pretty soon they treated the Russians as bad as they did the Jews, and so the Russians said, well, we got no other choice. We might as well fight or die, because the Germans are not going to give us a break. But anyhow, the arrogance, not only at Leningrad, lost the war in the East, but Dunkirk, that was another arrogant thing on Hitler, and there was other things he did. You can't...
First of all, the guy was, hopped up on all kinds of stuff, according, I know Dr. Morell was like the fun guy, but you were telling me one time that there was another doctor, like in the shadows, that was providing all that shit.
That was Dr. Jacobson, the Jew doctor that invented this happy drug, this mixture of meth and other things, that he was shooting up a lot of big shots in the Third Reich, and then he got it to Morell, and Morell was shooting Hitler up with it, and then when Hitler got mad at him, and so Jacobson fled the country and came to Brooklyn, New York, and then ended up shooting half the people in Hollywood up with this stuff, including John F. Kennedy and Nixon and all kinds of people were addicted.
Yeah, you said there's a book about that. What's that book called?
That's Dr. Feelgood.
Dr. Feelgood, do you have that?
I have it on a CD, and I'm just setting up my stuff here. I'm going to try to copy it, and if I can copy.
Who's the author of that, son?
I don't have the author's name right in front of me, but they've been on radio and TV, but they didn't get much coverage because people don't want to accept the fact that the president was hopped up on drugs and he was so bad off the night before the Nixon debate, couldn't even get him out of bed. They had to take him in to doctor.
Yeah, that's not what led to his downfall. Executive Order 11110, when he was going to, audit the Federal Reserve, and then he was going to start pulling troops out of Vietnam, and that pissed off the military-industrial complex. Kennedy did so much shit to piss off the big boys when he fired Alan Dulles after Alan Dulles came up with this idea called Operation Northwood, which they were going to stage terrorist attacks in the United States and blame it on Cuba as a pretext for us to go to war against Cuba. I mean, he fired Alan Dulles, presented with the idea, and he fired him right on the spot. I mean, Kennedy pissed off so many goddamn bigwigs.
Yeah, but every president pisses off bigwigs, and they don't.
No. Kennedy was the last president we had. Every guy we had since then was a puppet.
Well, I don't get
it. I was meaning to ask you something. I was wondering. You've been around a long time. You probably remember when Eisenhower was president and stuff like that. In your opinion, who was the worst president? I think the one we got now. I think it's been a steady progression of worst presidents ever since Reagan. Reagan really helped out the super rich. Then we got the CIA guy, George Bush in there, and then we got Clinton. And then we just accelerated downhill from there. What do you think?
I can't even really come to a conclusion on who was the worst. I think they're all bad. I can't remember. I don't think there was a good president in my lifetime. They all did crazy things. Look at Eisenhower, the way he, in the pretext of fighting communism, went all over the place, installing dictators all over South America and all kinds of stuff. And look what Eisenhower did in after World War II, when he forced the German POWs by the thousands to live out in the open with no cover, no food or anything. They starved to death, they froze to death and everything else, and he knew all about it and didn't do anything about it. So anyhow, I don't have any use for any of these presidents. Well, no, Keel Hall was...
That was called.
No, that wasn't Keel Hall. Keel Hall was when the Russians...
Well, the Russians were repatriated, that's right.
They made a deal with the Russians and forced them into boxcars and took them back to Russia and then sent them up to Siberia, and most of them died. No, I'm not a guy that thinks any world leader is much worth a damn. I mean, you know, you got to watch them all the time. I don't trust, you know, a lot of right-wingers have gotten all excited about Putin. I don't, because he was a KGB man. I mean, Christ, I mean, who knows how many people, white people, he tortured and killed. And so I you know, they say, well, he did some good. Well, yeah, every one of these presidents did some good, and every one of them did a lot of bad, you know. And, of course, any president...
Any good. I can't think of any bit of good that Reagan, Bush, Clinton, or Bush 2, and Obama have done.
Well, I don't know. I don't have their whole absolute record in front of me, but I think you're pretty right. One of the yardsticks for me is any president that takes American people into a war... of occupation offshore that does not have to do with the direct defense of continental United States is pretty much a war criminal. This idea that, oh, we're going to protect a country by smashing a country thousands of miles away is ridiculous. You know, Vietnam was a fiasco. Korea was a fiasco. These wars didn't have to happen. And these presidents that sign off on them, as far as I'm concerned, are war criminals. I mean, this is pure and simple. I mean, you know, when Wilson signed off on sending all our boys to Europe, where millions died, they're celebrating, you know, they're really celebrating the history of the First World War right now. They're not commemorating it, they're celebrating. They're war lovers. They love war. And, you know, a million guys, white guys, English guys, German guys, French guys, died in one battle.
The Battle of Verdun, I think they lost like a million Frenchmen alone.
And the battle too of the Somme, I think they call it the Somme. But you see, any man that has the power to send that many people to their deaths is no hero of mine. They can use whatever excuse they want. He had no excuse to send those troops over there. No real excuse. Technically, it was totally unconstitutional. And even FDR,
you can't deny the shit that's going on behind the scenes, that, you know, the Germany built that railroad from Berlin to Baghdad, and England didn't want Germany to get that kind of oil because it couldn't compete with them on an economic level. And then there was, you know, the sinking of the Lusitania, and they had an armed escort until it came around the coast of Ireland. And they woke up one morning, all the ships were gone, everything was just sitting duck. Everything's set up.
Well, essentially, the
international bankers.
Essentially, World War One was really a battle between cousins. It was a family struggle, and the bankers took advantage of it. But it was really a struggle among the monarchs who were all related. And, you know, that's what's...
And you know what? I'm glad you acknowledge that they were related, because Queen Victoria, the Queen of England at that time, I guess was a cousin of the Kaiser in Germany.
Of course. Yeah, well, that's the way it worked back then. That was nothing new. That went on for hundreds of years. The monarchs, they're not going to marry commoners, you know, like some of the British have done lately, but they married, always married.
Don't even think that Kate Middleton's a commoner. She's not a commoner.
I'm not saying just her, I'm saying several the monarchy people have married into, but
see, what you're trying to get away from with that statement right there, you're trying to get away from the fact that there are bloodlines of the Illuminati.
Oh, shit. Here we go again.
You call it conspiracy. I call it right out in the open.
Wait a minute. I'm the one that says it's out in the open. You're the ones that come. You're the one that's.
You don't think it's all on mess. You don't think it's strange that Barack Obama is the blood relative of Dick Cheney?
Because,
I mean, come on. Even Obama.
I don't know whether he is or not. I mean, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Obama even admitted he's related to Cheney.
So what does that have to do with saving the white race? That they're related.
Hey, listen. We look at all these people that are on the world stage. They're white. Oh, they would never do it. Say yes, they will, because we don't belong to their bloodline.
Yeah, the ruling class. I talk about that all the time, but I don't get into the.
I think there's plenty of white people out there thinking, oh, you know, we'll never get done because the world's run by white people. That don't mean jack shit. They will do us in because they know history. They know that we've been a thorn in their side for hundreds of years. You know, white peasants only take so much before we rise up and kick their ass. You know, the other thing, black, brown, and yellow don't do that. They're more subservient.
It's the haves against the have-nots. It always has been, probably always will be. I mean, it's simple. The struggle is simple. The ruling class wants it all. And the working class wants to get some of it, and they can't get it. And so unless they rise up in civil war and so forth, they don't get anywhere. I mean, you know, and even when they do, a lot of times they don't get anywhere. But, you know, life is a lot simpler than people seem to realize. They want to make everything a real complex conspiracy. And it's basically greed and religion and all that stuff mixed together. You know?
Hey, you know, you ever heard of an economist by the name of Bill Gunderson?
I don't think he's an economist. He's an ex-FBI agent, isn't he?
No, not that. No, that's Ted Gunderson.
Oh.
No, he left the FBI to expose a bunch of shit. No, Bill Gunderson, he's one of these financial guru guys. He's on, you know, Bloomberg Radio talking about money and shit. He's on the radio yesterday. Now, listen to him. He's talking about pushing money overseas. You gotta start investing in India and China. You know, these markets here in America are dead. You know, you gotta start really pushing your money overseas.
Well, the question I'd ask
that is... That guy a traitor, right?
Well, who's got the money to be investing in anything? I mean, the working class doesn't have money to invest in anything, wherever it's at. He's talking to upper middle class, a few that are left, and also, you know, the lower tier wealthy people. That's who he's talking to. He's not talking.
That says it right there that they don't give a damn about our people. That they just, you know, they want to just make money wherever they can make money. Screw the working class. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's never changed. It's always been that way. There's nothing new going on. It's just they got new technology to pull it off, new weapons to enforce it, and all that kind of stuff. But the basic plan has always been the same. The rich take from the poor. and the only reason we got out of middle class is because we bombed the shit out of Europe and they didn't have anything to produce anything with, and so we got all the marbles. Otherwise, there would have never been a real middle class in this country.
Yeah, but you recognize the middle class in this country is going away, right?
Going away? It's gone. I mean, if you don't have enough money in the bank or in your pocket to feed yourself for 1 year and pay your rent and mortgage and everything, then you're poor class. You're not middle class. I mean, all this stuff of living on credit has nothing to do with the real middle class. It's a phony middle class. Everybody's kiting checks. I get a kick out of how the newspaper now, everybody goes at each other over all this stuff, when life is really quite simple. They got it.
Here it is. Here it is, Radio Club. This is Tom Metzger oversimplifying it. Go ahead,
yeah.
Tom. How's life doing
that? It's simple. They got it, and they want to keep it, and you want it, and you can't get it unless you form an army and take it away from them. Unless you're prepared to take it away from them, then everything else is a waste of time. You know, evolution and might is right, all that stuff is the way it goes. And to cry over, you know, and I get upset. Don't get me wrong. When I watch all this shit going on in the Middle East, I mean, I sit there and I get sort of depressed. I mean, it's going on everywhere, and the wealthy class are making a fortune off building weapons, and they're just genociding anybody gets in their way. And I mean, it's so sickening that I know guys, progressives, that get sick over it. I get sick over it. Some right wingers get sick over it. But it's just totally out of hand. Here's something I wanted to pass by you. I saw a film. I didn't write down the name last night, but it was about the Great Pyramid of Giza. And the professors had the theory that there was something, really, really something inside that pyramid. Of course, there's been a lot of movies like that. But this one turned out that they were saying that the guys from outer space came down and infused lowly mankind with a lot of abilities and gave us a lot of knowledge that we learned, but they had enslaved us for quite some time. But then there was a battle, and somehow most of those left. And, of course, everybody worshiped Ra, the sun, which really I do too. I don't worship anything, but Ra, who represents the sun, and that sun is the only really god that we should pay attention to, because without the sun, we're screwed flat. Anyhow, they go down into this pyramid, and they keep going down and through different levels, and they finally found supposed to be the queen that was down there in a sarcophagus. They open it up, and the guy throws her skeleton out, and they almost pass out. Throws it out on
Wait, I didn't understand. The guy opens it up and what?
Opens up the coffin, and there's this queen, and the rest of them think this is a great treasure they've been looking for. Well, the other guy, he said, take a hold of that skeleton, and they did, and he throws it out on the ground. It breaks it 100 pieces, and they're all aghast. But underneath her, there's a lock, and he has a special key that several people have died getting, and he unlocks this. That opens up a trap door that goes even farther down in the pyramid. Then they get way down in the pyramid, and they find these mummies that are warrior mummies that have a face like the extraterrestrials, and there's hundreds of them down there, and all this. And then this was the end of a 5,000-year period when a bunch of stuff was supposed to happen, and they were supposed to come back and take over the Earth. Anyhow, these guys start marching around and all that. Anyhow, it's sort of complicated, but it's interesting because it has some, I think, relevance to what I'm going to say now, which is my point. I got to thinking about it. Everybody's blaming all this carnage in the Middle East on oil. And surface-wise, like that queen in her coffin, it is. But maybe the whole game is by the few in high power are out to destroy all evidence of our history. Remember when they went into Iraq and
Wait, hold on. I just sent you a digital recorder about, I don't know, a month ago with a number of shows that I've done, and this was a pretext of one of my shows, how they're destroying ancient knowledge all over the world. When they went to that museum in Baghdad, it was an organized assault on that thing, museum. You know, witnesses said it to them. People who were doing destroying were wearing earpieces, like they were receiving instructions from people.
Yeah, I agree with you, and this is why I think the Jews are a lot of the top Jews are the top of this conspiracy to go around and start and get all these wars going and destroy all the antiquities of the Middle East where.
Exactly.
And, because now we have the ability through electronics and satellites and everything else to find things we couldn't find before. And I think there were people who were afraid we were finding too much.
I am 100% agreeing with you. And I also, they know that there's a subterranean huge cavity underneath the pyramids. They got that by some kind of satellite imagery technology thing, but nobody has gone down there to explore it.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too far off into that field because it can.
They're destroying ancient knowledge because, and one of the reasons why, and I said this in my show, one of the reasons why they're really pushing race mixing is because they want to hide the DNA evidence that I believe that they don't want us to see that the white race is fruit cake someplace else.
Well, that's very possible. And, of course, remember, Iraq was sort of. In that Iraq area was, and Mesopotamia was the basis of where the white race had evolved to the point that they went from hunter-gatherer to farmers and developed agriculture.
Right.
So that was, from what I can understand, the beginning of the rise of Aryans. And I sure as hell can believe that more than I can believe any kind of Jesus crap.
Yeah, no. I think you think about this wars in the Middle East and stuff like that. And if the Jews maybe put them just to stir shit up. I think you falls on accurately.
You know what's funny too? Modern technology has proved that almost everything the Jews have said in Israel is fake. All the places, most.
I got a book right now that I haven't. I ordered. I just received it, but I ain't. Cracked the cover yet I got two more books before that, but it's called The Bible Unearthed, and it's by two Israeli archaeologists, and I haven't read it yet, but I know how it ends, and I know they call it an iconoclastic book, because basically they did all these archaeological excavations all over the Middle East, and they can't substantiate not one Bible story, not one.
Yeah, and what's interesting, and what drives a lot of our people that are supposedly on our side, they don't think an Israeli Jew can be trusted, but most of the exposures of these frauds of the Bible are being exposed by Israeli scientists.
That's right.
Not by Christian scientists, of course, and not by a hell of a lot of others. Of course, they're probably afraid to do it because they'd be called an anti-Semite immediately. But no, the Israeli non-religious scientists are uncovering that all the time.
Right.
that's what's so crazy about people following the Bible. I mean, there's certain portions of the Bible that I'm sure are pretty correct, and there's some sayings once in a while in the Bible are pretty correct. But most of the Bible's nothing but genocide and debauchery and murder and occupation and everything. I mean, it's a dirty book. It's a porno book. They shouldn't let any kid read the Bible or have a Bible until it's at least 18, just like they do porno books,
Right.
I mean, and they talk in the school, in the churches, in Sunday school, they talk this Old Testament stuff but since they believe all this stuff, they go along with it. They teach the little kids about all the foreskins and everything. I mean, David and Goliath, that's a bunch of bullshit. All the Noah's Ark, the movie they just made on Noah's Ark was fantastic. It was crazy. It was unbelievable, but no more unbelievable than the real so-called biblical story. It's all nonsense.
Right. You got that incident in the Book of Numbers where Balaam is being talked to by his donkey, a donkey who sees an angel in the road up ahead with a flaming sword, and this donkey's like trying to like warn him, and I guess Balaam was shocked. The donkey's speaking in a human voice, but some preacher would use that as, God will do whatever he can to get through to the hard-headed people, They'll make some lesson out of it, but, I'm not supposed to believe that a donkey was really speaking.
Well, how about that one Israeli Jew character that caused the sun to stop? The sun stood still.
Joshua.
Joshua. The sun stood still so he could win a battle.
Yeah, you know, and then some scientist comes along and says, you know what that would do to the Earth if that ever happened? It would be chaos.
Yeah.
Like a planet.
So something's going on over there. Like I say, it was sort of symbolic that they took the skeleton of this princess that everybody else thought this was the big deal, threw her out of there and unlocked the key and went into the real secret of the pyramid. And I think that's probably what's going on here, even though there's, you know, most people that are in the oil business and fighting over oil don't have any clue to what may be underlying the whole thing.
And don't forget, when they went into Iraq, that's the second time in 2003, they went straight for Baghdad.
Sure.
And they left the country wide open. They went straight for Baghdad. Not in, you know, the military way of doing it is, you know, is surround your objective, take one town at a time, and move towards the center. They didn't do that. They went straight for Baghdad, leaving the countryside wide open for insurgents, which they wanted a prolonged war, because that's only going to enhance the military-industrial complex. Who cares if your kid gets killed in battle? But they went straight for Baghdad, and one of the first objectives was that museum.
What's your take now on what's going on in Gaza and Netanyahu in this? What's your take on this?
I really think that they are really setting the stage for World War III.
Well, I've heard that.
They've been wanting a World War III dealing with the Middle East for decades now. We're long overdue for it. You know, they need this war to create chaos in the global scene so the global forces say, all right, we're the heroes, we're going to stop all this. Now you got to surrender all your sovereignty. Now we've got the world order. Now we've got a global government.
Yeah, you're talking about world, world government. Well, anyhow, Netanyahu is doing stuff that don't make sense to me. He's overplaying his hand way
exactly.
Too...
That's why I think he's not really this dedicated Jew and this man. I think he's part of some cabal. I think personally he don't give a damn about Israel.
Well, the other point is, if you know, I got to give him this much. If Hamas would just have quit throwing those pissy-ass little rockets over there, they wouldn't have had an argument. They didn't have an argument except those rockets until those three kids turned up murdered, and now they found a policeman who testified, a Jew policeman, that they weren't killed by Hamas at all. So that just came out Friday. So,
more false flag shit. I've been catching wind of something that Hamas was not even started by Palestinians, that the actual first members of Hamas, or the guy that really came up with Hamas, was actually a Mossad agent.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. In fact, I wouldn't doubt that those three Jew kids weren't murdered by Mossad, because people say, oh, they wouldn't do that, they wouldn't do that. I mean, I think that most of the Jews that died in the concentration camps were a direct result of punishment by the top Zionists against these German Jews, mostly.
I totally agree with that.
And so everybody said, oh, no, they would never do that. Well, to gain the world, why wouldn't they? To gain the power they've got in Israel, it was worth them getting rid of a few hundred thousand Jews.
Yeah, that is one of the biggest stumbling blocks amongst our people. You know, I hear that from my family, all the time. Oh, our government would never do that. I mean, they don't understand that, you know, people are on this planet and all they want is power, and they would do anything to get it.
Right. And they would stop at nothing. And the average guy, every time I talk to people on the street, you know, and I went to the street fair Friday and I was talking to some people. I sit down beside this one guy and I was passing this by him. He was supposed to be some kind of a patriot deal. Anyhow, I said, well, what do you think of Israel doing all this stuff? What do you think about killing all these Palestinians? Oh, well, yeah, we got to back Israel. We got to back Israel. We got to back Israel. It's like listening to Fox TV every time you talk to anybody. Now, no matter what, they want to stick with Israel. I wrote a letter to the paper.
But here's the thing, Tommy, here's the thing. In your neck of the woods, in your area of north central Indiana, when you're talking, most people in your area, they're going to sound just like the talking heads on Fox. You go out to Berkeley, you know, out in California, you talk to anyone there, they sound like the talking heads on MSNBC.
Yeah.
This is two sides of the same coin.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I write letters, and I've been talking about Israel, you know, like you're tired of being Israel's bitch, you're tired of being Israel's whore. Anyhow, a guy wrote a letter back and said, well, God said he who blesses the Jews will be blessed, and he who doesn't is, you know, they come back with that every time, and it drives me up the wall, and I'm coming back at him and say, well, does he bless the bastards that murdered 250 of our naval people on the USS Liberty? Did
right.
God bless that shit, you know? And they don't know really too much what to say. I think they, most people have forgotten all about it. They might as well never even have
happened. Right. You know why that ship came under attack, don't you?
Well, yeah. They were listening to...
It was a communication ship, and they were intercepting... they had evidence of the fact that Israel started the Six-Day War, not Egypt, Syria, and Jordan.
Of course. Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
They wanted that ship to go to the bottom. And I guess President Johnson had a top Israeli diplomat, whatever, in his office when it was going down. And I guess President Johnson was pissed off that the ship didn't go to the bottom.
Yeah, and of course, too, they held back the fighter planes that were going to come over and pull them out of the fire. Yeah. Well, that's why I say all these presidents have been criminals. In one way or another, whether it's destroying the environment, whether it's attacking innocent people, whether it's phoning up wars or what, they're all criminal. All of them. And so I don't want people talking to me about how great this president, how great that president was. Bullshit. They all have blood on their hands.
Right.
Now, I mean, I sort of go along with the anarchists.
Which one of your favorite sayings is government is organized crime?
That's right. In fact, I didn't come up with that. A lot of other people have said that. It is organized crime. And until people understand that, like the book I've got on my shelf, My Enemy, the State, by Spencer, which is true. The wherever power gathers, corruption gathers, criminality gathers. It just goes along with it. The only thing you can hope for is trying to limit the corruption as much as possible and keep the power somewhat out of the hands of too much power. And, you know, the weakest presidents we've had were probably the best. You know, I think
right.
Looking back on Jimmy Carter, he looks a lot better to me because he was.
But I knew you were going to mention Carter. Well, I knew it.
He was trying to go back, get the solar power going, even putting them on the top of the White House and all that stuff. And he was trying to be peaceful as much as possible. And so, but they destroyed him. You know,
right.
You know, they say blessed are the peacemakers. Bullshit. People worship the war makers. Every president that gets into a war, they make the big hero. I mean, look at that rat Reagan. They got highways named after him, airports after him, everything else, while he was going down into Central America and murdering people by the thousands, you know?
Right.
Well, anyhow...
When Nixon was the president, I mean, he couldn't have Salvador Allende in Chile running things down there, nationalizing things, helping out the poor people stuff. He had to go down there and, you know, with his CIA and get him out of office, and then who they put in charge? A right-wing Pinochet who came up with the death squads and killed all those people.
They always back up the ruling class, and Nixon, all of them, and the CIA, their job was to put dictators in office that would do what the corporations here in this country wanted them to do. That's pure and simple. You work for us. We'll support you with our troops or whatever we need to do. And, of course, if you get out of line, we're going to kill you. A lot of them didn't think about that, like Ortega from Panama and so forth, Ortega. All these guys that have been dictators. Look at Gaddafi. He had the world by the ass, and and the country's in terrible shape because he's not still in power. But these guys never think that the CIA are going to dump him. They get that power and they think, well, I'm obeying what they want me to do. They shouldn't hurt me. But these guys change their plans. You know, they decide, well, no, we want to do it this way. We want Arab Spring now, you know, the pretense of democracy. You know, these bullshit guys at the top are no good. I mean, does that make me an anarchist? I don't know, but I'll tell you, I just...
You know what, I already wear that label. I consider myself an anarchist. I don't believe... Think about this. We cannot trust any big government. And these skinheads out there say, well, what about National Socialism? Yeah, let one generation, two generations go by after a National Socialist revolution, then they'll be betraying the working class again.
Yeah, all systems become corrupt sooner or later. Right. And even though National Socialism would probably fit our race better than any of the other stuff, but even it, the top of the... National Socialists in Berlin at the peak of their power, they were corrupt. I mean, you had Goring was cocaine addict, and you had all kinds of crap going on in the high command. These weren't purist National Socialists. They pretty much killed off all the real National Socialists. But and then the next thing, the power is go to war. We got we're big guys and arrogance and the whole bit, and bring the whole thing down. I mean, you know.
Right.
So anyhow, it's going to go on. It's been going on for thousands of years, and it's going to keep going on. So the only thing you can do is try to limit it as much as you can and make people aware of what's going on as much as you can.
Well, I tell you what, I'd like to see my race survive to see the next millennium.
Oh, it'll survive. It'll survive. I have no doubt of that.
No.
In what condition?
With all the Arabs flooding into Europe, with all the Asians flooding into Australia, with all the non-whites flooding into America, how the fuck are we going to survive?
Yeah, we're like the Chinese were after they were invaded by the Mongols. The Mongols didn't know how to count, and they had to have somebody to run the government, so they brought in the...
That's where they got the Asians.
They brought the Jews in. They brought the Jews in to run
the... No. They got the Asians to replace all the smart white people now.
Believe me, it's highly overrated, this Asian thing. I'm not saying they're not...
Oh, no, I know it's overrated, but they believe that.
Who believes that? The Asians?
No, the people who run society. They believe, we can always have the Asians come and take over the white man.
No, they don't believe that. They want to use them like they did the niggers and everybody. They want to use everybody, and the Asians that can move up a little higher, a certain percentage of them, but the creative intelligence of much of the Asians does not fit them to be Einsteins and Edisons and all that kind of stuff. So, no, they definitely have to keep a certain amount of the white race, Aryan people, alive. They do. And they will. And that's good, because that always leaves us with the possibility of overthrowing them, where they can walk in there and just slit their throats, like the little chambermaid did with Marat of the French Revolution, who was the last evil son of a bitch left alive, and she just walked in, he was in the bath, and slit his throat. No, the answers are pretty simple. I mean, the anarchists had answers back at the turn of the century, back in 1919, along in there, where they were really taking it to the rich. In this movie I watched the other night about that, and the whole bit, and how they were sending bombs to John D. Rockefeller and all these guys. I mean, you know. So anyhow, the poor, if they decide to get mean, they can get very mean. And when these guys have Aryans working for them at the top to keep their system going, well, that means that those Aryans are close to the top. They can easily figure a way of slitting their throats. I mean, you know, so.
I think you're a little bit too optimistic.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I am. I always thought I was sort of pessimistic, but...
Listen, you have it on.
I don't know what the hell I am anymore. Anyhow, We're running over the time for the show, and Sling Blade, it's been great, and we'll have you back next Tuesday, right?
Yep, next Tuesday.
Okay, and I'll see you then in 14-5.
14.
Just a bowl of cherries. Don't make it serious. Life's too mysterious. You work, you slave, you worry so, but you can't take your dough when you go, go, go. Keep repeating, it's the berry. The strongest oak must fall. The best things in life. So how can you lose what you never own? Life is just a bowl of cherries. So live and laugh it on. Keep repeating, it's the berry. What you never want. Life is just a ball.